How is it that we find ourselves surrounded by such complexity, such elegance?
The genes of you and me,
the genes of you and me,
we're all made of DNA. We're all made of the same chemical DNA. We're all made of DNA.
Hi, you're listening to DNA Today, a podcast and radio show where we discover new advances in the world of genetics. From genetic technology like CRISPR to rare diseases to new research, we have you covered. For a decade, DNA Today has brought you the voices of leaders in genetics. I'm Kira Dineen. I'm a certified genetic counselor and your host.
Guests are today from Phase Genomics. So we're joined by Dr. Ivan Leek-Acho, who is the founder and CEO and has worked in the genetics and genomics research field for over 20 years. Dr. Steven Ecker is the VP of Research and Development, also a lifelong scientist who was part of the faculty at Johns Hopkins prior to joining Phase. Thank you both so much for coming on the show. I'm really excited. We're going to be exploring new generation cytogenomic applications in the reproductive genetics and also oncology spaces. And I'm especially excited because in undergrad, I majored and got my degree in cytogenetics. So it's going to be interesting to revisit all of this in the field because I graduated my undergrad 5 years ago. So that's ancient history in genetics. So I'm excited to dive into all this and see what is new. But I thought I would start with a little bit of background in terms of Phase Genomics and what you have developed, starting with what Cytoterra is and what Oncoterra is, and how does this next generation cytogenomic technology work? Because this is a new term for me, cytogenomic.
Yeah, thanks, Kira. And first, thanks for having us. It's always fun to do these kinds of events. So the high level summary is something like this. You know, there's a lot of genome sequencing that's happening these days, and it's all over the news, et cetera. But as you pointed out, traditionally, like if you look at the oncology space, it's really been dominated by the looking at the structure of the genome, right? So cytogenetics is sort of an umbrella term for a lot of tools that look at how chromosomes are arranged. Right. And you're not, you know, and a lot of this is because the sequencing tech hasn't existed for the last 60 years, whereas microscopes have. And so you've had the ability to look at genomes rearranging, et cetera. But the problem is, as important as that information is, regular sequencing tools have a hard time looking at structural rearrangements because the underlying problem being that, like, when two pieces of the genome swap places or flip around, it doesn't change the sequence. So your sequencing data is the same. And so how do you leverage the power of all these cool new sequencing tools to solve in a better way these old problems of cytogenetics where you're looking at structure, right? And that's what Cytoterra and Oncoterra are. These are platforms that we developed based on our core technology that basically sort of leverage the power of next generation sequencing tools towards cytogenetics. That's why it's called cytogenomics. It's kind of like a mix of both. It's like you're using genomics to answer cytogenetic kind of problems. And you know, and these methods really give you the ability to master this dimension of biology. And we're super excited about them, obviously, because we think it's going to create real impact and real lasting change to the field.
Yeah, this seems like the next phase that we're headed into to be able to take the best of both worlds. As you've been saying, like with cytogenetics, traditionally, we're looking at, okay, let's look at a picture of the chromosomes, get a really big picture, overall picture, to look at that structure part. And so it sounds like part of what this testing is doing is it looks at how often a sequence touches another sequence. So it's called genomic proximity. Am I getting that right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's just interesting that you're able to build this map and it's like similar to a karyotype in terms of the information you have from that. And one concept as I was learning about all of this that came up is ultra long range sequencing. So I'm curious, what does that mean, ultra long range sequencing?
Right. So ultra long range sequencing is not to be confused with long read sequencing. So there's a suite of technologies these days that that sequence long DNA molecules. Companies like Pacific Biosciences and Oxford Nanopore, they try to sequence as long as DNA molecule as you can. What ultra long range sequencing does, our thing, is it doesn't do that. What it does is it captures which sequences are touching each other in when the genome is folded up in three dimensions, right? Inside of a cell, the genome is a physical entity. It's curled up in a big spaghetti ball. And sequences from far apart will be next to each other in three dimensions. And that's what we capture. We capture little junctions between DNA molecules that are touching, and we sequence them, and we can count how often every part of the genome is touching every other part of the genome. And it tells us, because sequences that are close touch more, and sequences that are further touch less, it's a way of basically measuring how far and how close every bit of the genome is, but using sequencing instead of kind of visual microscopy.
Wow. So you're really able to create a map based on this information. And I imagine that's much more advantageous because you're able to get down into that more like molecular level, as opposed to with a karyotype, it's like, okay, we see the chromosome, but we can't zoom in that much. So how does this compare to other types of genome sequencing? Like, if we're comparing to other labs, other approaches, what makes this unique?
Right. So there's a good number of things about this that are unique. So one of the things is, because it is based on NGS, next gen sequencing, you can multiplex this like crazy, right? It's a much lighter way of doing it. Traditional cytogenetics, as you're familiar with, you really have to dedicate to one sample at a time, right? So they're processed, there's a lot of manual labor, there's a lot of looking at microscopy images, and you need a certain
amount of time spent in the lab with all of that.
You need a certain amount. You need somebody who really understands how to interpret the how to visually interpret them. They're kind of artisanal, right? Like, people have opinions, and I think this is going here, right? And it's hard to really, really scale that. You know, we even talk to people who are like, well, a patient moves from one city to the next, and they have to get tested again because their previous test was like penciled in. So it's hard to scale these things. But the beauty of sequencing data is that it's very digital and it's very standardized, just inherently standardized. And so it's, you know, this approach makes it first. So first of all, it makes it more scalable, makes it easy to process many different samples. It is also amenable. You can use it on many more different sample types. The most exciting thing about this, I think, is that so most of the samples in the oncology space are preserved in formalin, right? They're preserved as FFPEs. And because they're preserved in FFPEs, you can't do traditional karyotyping and traditional cytogenetics on them because everything is fixed and dead. You also can't do long-read sequencing on it. You can't do PacBio sequencing. You can't do nanopore sequencing. You can't do bionano optical mapping and other optical mapping. Anything that requires a long, beautiful DNA molecule, you essentially can't do on FFPEs because of how it's been preserved. And that's a huge problem because the like 90-something percent of cancer samples are saved as FFPEs. And so they're just sitting there. You can't analyze them. And we know from decades and decades of cytogenetics work that that information is super important. And there's no way to get them out of 90% of oncology samples.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point because back in my lab days, you know, a lot of samples would be that. And I think the only thing we really did when I worked in a cyto lab was we could do FISH on some things. We couldn't take it and then start growing more cells from that to be able to look at the chromosomes with those karyotypes. So yeah, I think that's one of the things when I looked at it, I'm like, wait, am I reading this right? Like, we can actually do this on paraffin samples with this. And right. I think that's just such a game changer because if you have someone that's had cancer a while ago or they had a tumor that was biopsied and that's how it was preserved, how else are we going to be able to do this testing? This seems like, I don't know, from my experience, one of the only things that is being developed that we could do testing on for it.
Asaragen is a rare disease biopharmaceutical company. Asaragen takes on rare orphan diseases that typically have no approved treatments and works to develop therapies to help patients. The needs of patients who suffer from underserved rare diseases drive Asaragen's mission. Be sure to tune into our episode with Asaragen in February as we celebrate Rare Disease Month. Learn more at Asaragen.com. That's Asaragen.com. Asaragen, working for a better life for patients with rare diseases. Did you know PerkinElmer Genomics was one of the first laboratories to offer whole genome sequencing on a clinical basis? whole genome sequencing can maximize clinical diagnostic yield for patients. With a turnaround time of 6 weeks, PerkinElmer's whole genome sequencing test is designed to provide access to additional valuable information compared to an exome. PerkinElmer Genomics provides one of the world's most comprehensive programs for detecting clinically significant genomic changes. PerkinElmer Genomics delivers knowledge that can empower health. PerkinElmer is a global leader committed to innovating for a healthier world. Join their mission at PerkinElmerGenomics.com. And also, stay tuned for our interview with PerkinElmer, where we're going to be exploring the power of whole genome sequencing. I'll also tease that my guest for this episode is a world-renowned geneticist, so you are not going to want to miss this one. But while you wait for the episode, head over to PerkinElmerGenomics.com to start discovering all PerkinElmer has to offer. Do you want to connect with other people who have the same genetic variant as you? You should check out Connect My Variant. It's an online resource that allows you to do just that. Connect My Variant also provides different avenues of informing your family of possible inherited risk of disease. This includes helping find where your genetic variant came from and finding distant cousins that may also be at risk. The University of Washington has supported the Connect My Variant project in an effort to help patients and families understand where their genetic variants come from. Check it out at connectmyvariant.org. We've been talking about karyotypes, this new technology. Is there any examples or maybe common ones that come to mind when looking at a type of chromosomal abnormality that you could identify with this type of testing that you're not going to be able to find on a traditional karyotype?
We're using sequence level information. So things, you know, that are smaller than 5 megabases, we can actually still see with our sample preparation methods. And beyond that too, also, you know, we're not limited by the cytobands. So we can see really high resolution complex events as well. In fact, a lot of times when we look at things that were identified as a simple translocation, like say a 922 translocation, what we see is something that's more complex than that. We see a series of translocations that are occurring instead of a single tiny event. So higher resolution, scalability, you know, you can have one person who's a very skilled laboratory scientist that can do many, many samples at once. And, you know, that makes a huge difference. And then also beyond that, we have access to single nucleotide polymorphisms or SNP level information potentially, because it is a sequencing based approach. And what that's going to allow us to do in the future is do work with loss of heterozygosity, whether it's copy neutral loss of heterozygosity or loss of sequences. And then also the other thing that I'm really excited about that's under development right now is being able to use those SNPs to phase a series of events so that we can say, oh, these mutations are occurring on the same chromosome, which is something that is really difficult with typical short read NGS technology.
Yeah, even as you're explaining this, I'm thinking, like, how many times did I do a karyotype where I thought, oh yeah, these two chromosomes swapped information, we have a translocation here, but I just couldn't see that there was actually more chromosomes involved in that translocation. So it seems like if I had this technology, maybe I would have picked that up for a bunch of different samples and had more information for those patients and providers. Some of this sounds like you'd need a lot of training to be able to use. I mean, what tools or machines would researchers need to have in order to perform tests with Cytoterra or Oncoterra?
Well, the great news is that this is a molecular biology kit. So it fits into a box that you can order like any other type of molecular biology kit. If your lab is equipped to make a next generation sequencing library, which is a pretty basic molecular biology lab, you can make an Oncoterra or Cytoterra library. And then of course you need access to Illumina-based sequencing, which is pretty ubiquitous these days. It's research use only at this time. And we're recruiting folks for beta projects. And these are projects where we could do the work in our lab, all the way from a sample to a completed analysis. And then also, like I said, this is a molecular biology kit. if you have a reasonably skilled molecular biology scientist in a laboratory, we can send them kits, and we're happy to get this assay working well in other people's hands as well.
So if you're listening to this and you're like, maybe I could do this, you got to get in contact with these guys.
But Kira, I should also say there's two things. We make it easy in different ways. So we, you know, the history of Phase is creating these kinds of solutions for different spaces. And, you know, because we all, you know, we're all scientists, we all came out of the lab, we sort of understand where the pressure points are. In addition to kind of having kits and services, et cetera, we built the software to do all the analysis. So we are basically, we're a biotech company, but we're also a software company. And so the key with a lot of folks is, okay, I know how to do stuff in the lab, but I don't know how to do any computational stuff, or, you know, I can do basic kind of computer programs, but I can't actually code. I can't do any of that. And we have all our kits, all our services, they come with the analytics. So the analytics we built, and they're ready, and you're going to get it done by not, you don't have to do it yourself. And because that's really where the stress point are in a lot of these things, is some people are really good on the analytics. Some people are really good in the lab, but most people can't necessarily or don't want to do both, right? So to try to make it as easy as possible for folks out there, we take that workload out. And so we make it easy either through, we do it for you, or like on the lab side, or we give you a kit and then we do all the analysis.
Yeah, that's certainly very helpful, because as you said, a lot of people are experts in one of them, but both of them, that's kind of hard to come by. And especially because so much is changing so quickly that a lot of people, you know, in their PhD programs, grad school, med school, whatever they went to, didn't necessarily learn all of these different computer programs, which is a whole nother topic to get into someday. Yeah. Just like, you know, should we be learning these things if we're getting a degree in genetics?
That's one of the reasons why, like, next-gen sequencing and genomics has had a bit of a problem really getting into medicine, because you know, if you have spent your life doing karyotyping and FISH and things like that, and suddenly somebody gives you a list, like a giant SNP table or something, right? Like a list of mutations, like, what are you going to do with that information? And so
I would be overwhelmed. I'd say, yeah, I'm going to go back to my karyotypes and FISH.
Yeah, and fairly so, right? And so we try to take that nightmare out of people's lives, right? And actually make it so you can actually do stuff with this.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm even thinking of, for like both in the prenatal and cancer settings, getting a sample that's able to be tested can be difficult, even if we're not talking about when it's paraffin embedded, like we talked about before, that, you know, you offer this great solution. It can also be difficult because sometimes you have disease cells, you don't have enough cells. And I just know you're hoping the cells grow. Sometimes they're just not happening. You're not getting enough. How does Cytoterra, you know, and Oncoterra too, to include that, how does it like eliminate some of those types of issues?
Yeah. So we've built, so the nice thing about this is you don't need growing cells. You don't need living cells. You don't need high molecular weight DNA. Cells can be frozen, et cetera. You also don't need quite as much. You need very little. And so we've actually developed a special preservative that you can basically collect, like you can take cheek swabs, put it in this preservative and leave it at room temp for a month, and it's still it will still work. And that's, you know, so you can eliminate skin punches and bleeding and all this kind of stuff. And so we really try to make it easy for people to really expand the footprint of this technology, because we really think it can really revolutionize the space.
Yeah, that certainly helps. You're just taking out the whole, you know, growing cultures and cells. I mean, that's so much a part of the process for a lot of these samples, and the time. Like when I send a sample in for a patient with like an amniocentesis and we're waiting on results, they're like, why is it taking so long? I'm like, because we can't make cells grow faster. Like if we could do that, I mean, game changer. But
keep in mind that they change when they grow, right? So when you do an analysis on some cells after you've grown them up for a while, some things in there might not be the same as what's in the actual patient. And this lets you just freeze that information right as you take the cells out.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Is that called an artifact when it happens, like when it's growing in the lab? I'm like going back to that.
It's one of the many types of artifacts one can experience. But
I suppose so, yeah. And kind of going on that prenatal level, for people that have experienced multiple pregnancy losses, Are there genetic changes that can be identified that maybe led to the losses? Like, if these genetic changes like are identified, how can that help possibly with future pregnancies of looking at some of this testing? Obviously, you said it's in research right now, but hopefully it's clinic in the future, you know?
Yeah. Well, you know, the first step is just identifying what you have. That's the first sort of level of defense. We don't give medical guidance information or any of that. But, you know, when you inform people and their doctors about specific conditions, there's value in that. So, you know, so without kind of listing specific events, you know, we think it can be useful to patients in many ways, because sometimes just knowing that you have something or you don't have something.
Definitely.
Yeah,
and
this is important.
Yeah. And I certainly meet with patients where that's the case, where we end up doing extra testing on parental samples to see, is there something that we should be aware of for future pregnancies and something that's
sometimes
gonna,
it's obvious. You know. Sometimes it's subtle.
Right.
You know, I mean, like classic things are like balanced translocations, where, you know, you might have a balanced translocation in your genome and you might be totally fine. It's only upon reproduction that you start seeing all these problems, and people don't know why. You know, things of that nature.
Yeah, and with this testing, I mean, being able to pick up such small translocations too, I see as being helpful, because, you know, there might be things that we're missing on that traditional karyotype, as we mentioned before. So that's helpful in the prenatal realm, preconception realm.
Have you done a genetic test and discovered you have a mutation or pathogenic variant, as we genetic counselors call them? One of the next steps is to inform your family they are at risk of also carrying the variant. Telling relatives about their risk can save lives, but these can also be tough conversations to have. Luckily, Connect My Variant offers resources to help, including ways to communicate results with suggested language. Whether you want to talk to your aunt or email a third cousin, Connect My Variant can help. You are not alone. Connect My Variant can connect you with others who have the same exact variant. Growing a network of people with the exact same variant who know about it can help your family members understand the impact of your genetic variant and the steps for them to get tested and to prevent disease. If you want to discover where your variant came from and learn more about what it means for your family, explore and sign up at connectmyvariant.org. Again, that's connectmyvariant.org. Asaragen is a rare disease biopharmaceutical company. Asaragen addresses rare orphan diseases that typically have no available treatment and strives to develop novel therapies which can have a positive impact on the lives of patients and families. As such, the needs of the patients who suffer from neglected rare diseases drive Asaragen's mission first and foremost. Their goal is to provide rare disease patients with compelling new therapeutic options that will allow them to lead the fullest lives possible. Such diseases have been frequently overlooked for drug development and remain orphan due to the assumption that they have a small individual footprint. By focusing on rare and orphan diseases, Asaragen hopes to bring a much-needed spotlight to the area by leveraging their collective conviction that these efforts will change the world for the better. Stay tuned for DNA Today's full episode with Asaragen in February as we celebrate Rare Disease Month. We'll be learning about Farber disease and hearing about the investigational enzyme replacement therapy that is currently being developed. In the meantime, you can learn more at Asaragen.com. PerkinElmer Genomics is a global leader in genetic testing focusing on rare diseases, inherited disorders, newborn screening, and hereditary cancer. Testing services support the full continuum of care from preconception and prenatal to neonatal, pediatric, and adult. Testing options include sequencing for targeted genes, multiple genes, the whole exome or genome, and copy number variations. Using a simple saliva or blood sample, PerkinElmer Genomics answers complex genetic questions that can proactively inform patient care and end the diagnostic odyssey for families. Learn more at PerkinElmerGenomics.com.
And we've talked about the resolution of this test, but I have to say, I'm really amazed by this, that we're combining like this SNP level along with like where physically sequences are in terms of creating that map. So did I get that right? I think, Steve, you were saying that you can go down to 5 megabases. Is that right?
Below 5 megabases.
Below 5, even better than that. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, So, you know, the resolution can be extraordinary. And so the caveat that I'll put there is that you need to sequence more to get higher and higher resolution. So when we are interested in looking at sort of karyotypic scale chromosomal rearrangements, we can use an actually remarkably modest amount of sequencing. And that's kind of one of the secret powers of the Oncoterra and Cytoterra, making it more available to more people because you just need less sequencing information. But you can get down to that SNP level of detail. It just requires more coverage, just like any other whole genome sequencing technology. And you know, these features are still in development. There's more to come. So definitely check back with us.
Yeah. So I'm even just thinking now, like with this type of testing, do you see a possibility where this could start replacing like karyotypes, fish, any of this? I mean, I know I'm you know, getting a little ahead of myself, but do you see that could be a possibility in terms of you're getting the same information and more? So are we, you know, is my degree going to be outdated in a few years?
We like to think of it as complementary, right? Yeah. And, you know, and of course, this is something that gets thrown around a lot in industry, is replacing this, replacing that. But, you know, people for over a decade now were saying that microarrays were going to get replaced by sequencing. And they're going strong. They're not going anywhere.
I'm still ordering them. So, yep.
FFPE still around, right? Karyotyping still around. We're not out to replace. We're out to help. We're out to empower people like yourself. You know, what we really hope with sort of the cytogenomics application is to really not to say this is the new way of doing things. It's to say this is like cytogenetics. It's just a better tool. This isn't replacing what you've learned. This is giving you a new, you know, it gives you a new like paintbrush in your palette. Like, you know, it's a new way of doing the analysis that you've been doing. It's just more powerful, more scalable. You can get more samples done. You can find things you could not have found before. It's going to be less of a headache. It's going to save you money. It's going to, you know, it's going to do all these sorts of things. And in the end, it's going to help not just you, like it's going to help patients, right? Hopefully, you know, beyond just kind of scientists and you know, docs.
Yeah, I think having more tools is always helpful too, because sometimes it's like, oh, this tool would work in this case, and really doing, you know, certain things case by case.
I mean, the other thing is, you know, like what you mentioned, there's different tools and you want to use all of them. One of the nice things about this is that it sort of combines the features of the most useful tools. Like it's basically, I mean, this is an overstatement maybe a little bit, but it's essentially combining a karyotype, a microarray, and every fish test possible all in one assay. And it's not saying that it's replacing them all, but it's giving you a way of doing all these things kind of in one shot, so that you can still do the other, you can still go follow up with a microarray to confirm some of these events, things like that. But that first pass, if you do it right, it saves you so much time because of these reflex tests that people normally do, which is like you do one thing, you see something, but you don't know something else about it. And so you have to do a different test and you have to wait for those results. And then you do another, right? So you do a microarray, you see something suspicious, you do a karyotype, you see some stuff, then you order a bunch of fish tests. And that just takes time and time and time. And if you had all that information in the beginning, even if it's not going to stop you from doing the other tests, but it can drastically inform what you do next, and it'll save you an enormous amount of time and effort later down the line, even if it's not a replacement per se.
Yeah, that's an interesting approach, like the workflow of it, because when I order testing for like, you know, an amniocentesis or something, I'm getting waves and waves of results. And so it's, you know, for the patients, it's like, hey, I'm calling you with the next one. And hopefully I have the one after that in a few days or a week or something. So, you know, I can see this being very advantageous somewhere down the line clinically, where we say, okay, maybe we start with this test and then we learn something. And then that's really going to give us a jump start to be able to know, oh, we're going to order that test next.
Right. That's a good way of putting it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that's really interesting. And just, you know, especially, you know, my brain is so in prenatal, but that it just takes results so long sometimes to get back. And sometimes we're fighting with like, okay, we're getting close to a time where we have to decide whether we're terminating this pregnancy or not, if that's a patient's choice or, you know, something they're considering. So it's, you know, things are very timely with pregnancy, but also with cancer, because people are waiting on information to inform treatment decisions and, you know, family getting tested. automated. So cutting out a lot of the time and extra tests that we don't need to be doing is really, really advantageous. If people are interested in this, you know, researchers, you know, I've mentioned they should get in contact with you, but do you have any advice in terms of how they can get early access to both Cytoterra and Oncoterra?
They can check out the website. They can email us through the website or through contact info that I'm assuming will be on your somewhere on this
episode. Yes, show notes, blog posts, yeah.
And, you know, we're all over Twitter. We're all over LinkedIn. Find us there, you know, hit like and subscribe and all that stuff. And we are easy to find if you're looking for us.
Yeah, phasegenomics.com, I think, is a good hub to start at and then kind of fan from there. And I really was enjoying just perusing the website. And I think it's helpful for, you know, as people might be just listening to this or watching our video on YouTube. It's also cool if you go to phasegenomics.com or dnapodcast.com and click the blog post for this episode. You can actually see some of the maps that we're talking about so that it's not as theoretical in your head. And you can actually see, like, okay, what has, you know, Steve and Ivan been talking about with these maps? What does that data look like? And it's really interesting, I think, just to be able to see it concretely, because a lot of genetics is so abstract. So it's nice to be able to see what it looks like.
And we love to interact with people. So we're happy to hop on phone calls and talk to folks and, you know, show them the data themselves. And,
yeah. Yeah. Hop on a Zoom call, share your screen, kind of go through a map. I'm sure you guys have done a lot of that. So, all right. Well, anything else before we close out?
Well, I want to thank you for having us. This has
been really fun.
And we hope to sort of help your listeners and hope we've edutained them a little bit. And,
definitely think so. You guys brought the energy today. And I think this is something that I'm really going to keep my eye on and just see how this changes. And as you said, like another tool in our belt. And I'm very curious to see, you know, I'm going to say when, not if, when it's going to be available clinically, because I think for me being like in the clinic space, that's really interesting and kind of seeing what comes out of research and everything. So thank you so much for coming on the show and just educating me about all of this too, because this was a lot of new information for me as well. So hopefully listeners really enjoyed learning along with me. But thanks again for coming on the show.
Thank you so much. Sarah.
For more information about today's episode, visit dnapodcast.com, where you can also stream all episodes of the show. We encourage your questions, comments, guest pitches, and ideas. Send them all into info@dnapodcast.com. Search DNA Today on Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, Facebook, so you can connect with us there. And a favor, please rate and review the podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen. This truly helps us climb the charts and allow more genetic nerds like yourself to find the show. DNA Today is hosted and produced by myself, Kira Dineen. Our social media lead is Corinne Merlino. Our video lead is Amanda Andrioli. Thanks for listening, and join us next time to discover new advances in the world of genetics.
The genes of you and me, the genes of you and me, we're all made of DNA. We're all made of the same chemical DNA. Me.